Good morning. Now, one of the things that I find interesting whenever we come to the end of one calendar year and we begin a new one are some of the shows, the news shows that are on that highlight the events from the past year. And they go over all the good times and the bad times. It seems like usually there's more bad than there is good. But then this will usually get me thinking back to my past year as well, and I'll start examining some of the highlights of my year, both the high points and the low points. And I think maybe that's something we might all do to some degree. We look back at the year, maybe fondly at some of the good things that had happened. And with the bad, you know, maybe we try to learn some lesson from the tests or trials that we had gone through. And then each year, there's also the shows where people will come on and they will try to make all kinds of predictions for the next year. It's amazing how often they are wrong with those predictions, but they make them. And I'm not much for making predictions myself, but I will say this, that I think that 2013 will probably be a lot like 2012. We're going to have highs, we're going to have lows, we're going to have good times, and we are going to face trials and challenges and tests. And with us, we, here in God's church, we've got a wonderful blessing. Because we have a God who sees all and knows all. And He is faithful in everything that He says to us and everything that He says He will do for us. If you would, look over in Corinthians chapter 10. Corinthians chapter 10, verse 13. It says, "No temptation has overtaken you except such as common to man." Now this is important. "But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able to bear." Now sometimes when I read that, I think, well, wait a minute. I've had tests and trials and temptations that I don't think I was able to bear because I failed them miserably. But when you read on, it says, "But with the temptation will also make the way of escape, that you may be able to bear it." The idea in this verse is, when we find ourselves facing down a trial or a test or some temptation, we must look to God and then take on that test with all of God's full help. This verse also tells us that God does provide. And if we look to Him and we use all that He does provide to us, we will overcome. But if we attempt to take these things on ourselves, if we look to our own strength to fight them, then that's when we start to fail. That's when we start to slip. So we must keep our eyes fixed on God and to look to Him for the answers. Now, I try debating on whether or not to do this. I'm not much of a joke teller. And you probably have heard this before, some of you. So maybe look at this more of an illustration to help make my point. But a man was sitting on his porch watching the rain come down. And another man pulls up in a pickup truck and says, "Hey, get in. This whole valley is about to be flooded. We've got to get you out of here." And the man says, "No, I'm going to trust my God. He said He'll provide." So the guy in the truck leaves. A couple hours later, water's coming up over the porch, running across the seat. And a man in a boat pulls up and says, "Sir, we've got to get you out of here. This whole valley is about to flood." And the man says, "No, about the same thing. No, I'm going to wait on God. He said He will provide." A couple hours later, the man's sitting on the roof. Water's rushing past him. And a helicopter flies over and says, "Sir, jump in. We'll get you out here and get you to safety." No, I'm going to wait. God said He'll provide for me. Within a few minutes, the man's washed away. And down he goes. Next thing he knows, he's standing before God, and he says, God, where were you? I waited. You said you would provide for me. And God said, provide. I sent you a boat. I sent you a truck. And I sent you a helicopter. What more did you want? Now, the point is, God does provide. But it may not be the way we would expect it, or maybe not even the way we want it. But we have to keep our eyes on Him, and we have to use whatever it is He does provide for us. I want to take a look at someone who did just that, kept his eyes on God the entire time. Look, if you would, in Genesis 22. Now, back a couple chapters here, God had made Abraham a promise. He made a covenant with him. He told Abraham that he would be the father of a multitude of nations, and that kings would descend from him. And then later in that same chapter 17, God also told Abraham that he would confirm that covenant with Isaac, his son. So as we read through 22 here, remember that Abraham had these promises in his mind. Verse 1, Genesis 22. Now it came to pass after these things that God tested Abraham and said to him, Abraham, and he said, here I am. Then he said, take now your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on one side of the mountain of which I shall tell you. Now, it doesn't say Abraham here argued with him any or tried to discuss it. He just says, so Abraham rose early in the morning and saddled his donkey and took two of his young men with him and Isaac his son. And he split the wood for the burnt offering and arose and went to the place of which God had told him. Then on the third day, Abraham lifted his eyes and saw the place afar off. And Abraham said to the young men, stay here with my donkey. The lad and I will go yonder and worship. And this is what I find to be interesting here. As Abraham kept those promises in his mind, he says, and we will come back to you. He says, we will come back to you. So Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and he laid it on his son Isaac. And he took the fire in his hand and a knife, and the two of them went together. But Isaac spoke to Abraham, his father, and said, my father. And he said, here I am, son. Then he said, look, the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering? And Abraham said, my son, God will provide for himself the lamb of a burnt offering. So the two of them went together. Then they came to the place of which God had told them, and Abraham built an altar there and placed the wood in order, and bound Isaac his son, and laid him on the altar upon the wood. And Abraham stretched out his hand and took a knife to slay his son. So he had the knife out ready. He was ready to do what God had asked him to do. But the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. And he said, here I am. And he said, do not lay your hand on the lad or do anything to him. For now I know that you fear God, since you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me. And then Abraham lifted up his eyes and looked, and there behind him was a ram caught in a thicket by its horns. So Abraham went and took the ram and offered it up for a burnt offering instead of his son. And Abraham called the place, the Lord will provide. As it is said, to this day, in the mount of the Lord, it shall be provided. Abraham knew all along what God had promised him. He also knew that no matter what God asked him to do, that God would be faithful and God would work it out. He knew that God was going to provide for him and that everything would be fine, and he never lost sight of that. Look, if you would, over in Exodus 17. I heard this a couple years back. I'm not quite sure remember where I heard this from, but in Israel, I guess, when the Israeli soldiers will meet one another, they have a greeting that they give. And in English, it is, remember the Amalekites. They believe that the terrorists that they're fighting today and the tactics that the terrorists use are those of the Amalekites from the past. And that's what's going on here in Exodus 17. The Amalekites, they see Israel coming out, and they're not going to take Israel on head on. They're going to go to the back. They're going to look for people who are falling behind, families, the elderly. They're looking for weak spots. That's the same way the terrorists will fight today. Okay, Exodus 17, verses 8 through 15. Now Amalek came and fought with Israel in... Now I actually had to look this word up and get a or how to say it, because I wasn't real sure, but the pronunciation I got was Rephidim. And Moses said to Joshua, "Choose us some men and go out and fight with Amalek. Tomorrow I will stand on top of the hill with the rod of God in my hand." So Joshua did as Moses said to him and fought with Amalek. And Moses, Aaron, and Hur went up on top of the hill. And so it was when Moses held up his hands that Israel prevailed. And when he let down his hands, Amalek prevailed. But Moses had become heavy. Hands became heavy. So he took a stone and put it under him, and he sat on it. And Aaron and Hur supported his hands, one on one side and the other on the other side. And his hands were steady until the going down of the sun. So Joshua defeated Amalek and the people with the edge of the sword. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Write this for a memorial in the book and recount it in the hearing of Joshua, that I will utterly blot out the remembrance of Amalek from under the sun." And Moses built an altar and called its name, "The Lord is my banner." The lesson here, the rod of God mentioned in this passage is symbolic of God Himself. And the lesson for us to learn from that is when we hold God up where we can see Him, we prevail. But as soon as we start to lose sight of God and we don't hold Him up where He should be, that's when we start to slip. That's when we start to fail. And I think it was interesting, too, that he calls the altar, "The Lord is my banner." You know, a banner is something that you hold up and you look up to it and you gaze on it. And that's the way God should be for us. We should hold Him up and gaze on Him and look to Him constantly. And then again, when Moses here grew tired, Aaron and Hur went up and supported him. And that's what we do for each other here. We are here to support one another. We're here to encourage one another, and we're here to encourage one another to keep our eyes permanently fixed on God. You know, when you read through the history of Israel, whether it be a king or the nation as a whole, the Bible will say that, you know, when they did what was right in their own eyes, that's when they started to slip into captivity. And it's the same for us. If we take our eyes off of God as we fight, and we're fighting a spiritual war, if we're not keeping our eyes focused on God, then we too can begin to slip. So we can't take our eyes off of God, not even for a moment. And I have an example of that. If you want to look over in Matthew 14, Matthew 14, verses 25 through 31. "Now in the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went to them walking on the sea. And when the disciples saw Him walking on the sea, they were troubled, saying, 'It's a ghost,' and they cried out for fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them, saying, 'Be of good cheer, it is I, do not be afraid.' And Peter answered Him and said, 'Lord, if it is You, command me to come to You on the water.' So He said, 'Come.' And when Peter had come down out of the boat, he walked on the water to go to Jesus. But when he saw that the wind was boisterous, he was afraid, and beginning to sink, he cried out, saying, 'Lord, save me.' And immediately Jesus stretched out His hands, caught him, and said to him, 'Oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt?' And then when they got into the boat, the wind ceased. The moment that Peter took his eyes off of Jesus, the moment he took them off, he started to sink. When he first stepped out of the boat, he was focused on Him. He was looking right at Him, jumped out, started to walk across that water. But when the wind started to blow, he got distracted. And for us, it's the world around us. There's so much distractions. It's anything to try to keep you from focusing on God will blow around and try to distract you in any way it can. But I'll say this much for Peter. As soon as he began to sink, he did the right thing. He cried out to God. He said, "Save me, Lord." And that's important. But also I think what's very important and is a very important lesson for us is that when he cried out, it says immediately Jesus stretched out his hand and caught him. Immediately he caught him. And I think that's a wonderful lesson for us. You know, God here was working out something in Peter, just as he was working out something in Abraham, in Isaac, and in Moses. And just as he's working something out in each one of us individually, God is working out his plan through us. And if we can stay focused and keep our eyes fixed on God, we are promised eternal life. Now, I want to leave you with this. You don't have to turn to this. I will read it to you. As I said, God is working out a plan for us. In Philippians 1, verse 6, it says, "Being confident of this very thing, that he who has begun a good work in you will complete it until the day of Jesus Christ." God is faithful in his promises to us, and he will provide for us. We just need to keep our eyes continually set on God. Have a great Sabbath.